Welcome to the Real Python Podcast. This is episode 299. What's happening at EuroPython 2026? The conference celebrates its 25th anniversary this year in Krakow, Poland. This week on the show, organizers Mia Bajic and Daria Linar-Gruzin join me to discuss this year's conference. Mia serves as the vice chair of the EuroPython Society, and Daria leads the EuroPython communications team. We dig into the details of the conference, including the wide variety of tracks, the reasoning for selecting the location, and the additional activities surrounding the event. We talk about volunteering, organizing, and continuing support for conferences. Mia and Daria also share the talks they're excited to check out and how they use Python currently. All right, let's get started. The Real Python Podcast is a weekly conversation about using Python in the real world. My name is Christopher Bailey, your host. Each week, we feature interviews with experts in the community and discussions about the topics, articles, and courses found at realpython.com. After the podcast, join us and learn real-world Python skills with a community of experts at realpython.com. All right. Well, I want to welcome Mia and Daria to the podcast. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. I'm excited to talk to both of you. I haven't talked about conferences in a little while. And when you sent the information about EuroPython 2026, I was like, wow, this sounds really cool. I definitely want to talk to you about some of the different topics you're covering and a little bit about the background of the conference. Andrew Northall, who I met at DjangoCon in 2025 when I went to Dublin, and it was kind of funny because I had mentioned that. There were a handful of people who had heard about DjangoCon Europe from us on the show and then showed up. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. So Andrew was one of those people. And so I got to meet him briefly there. But I guess he's involved in working on EuroPython this year and connected me with the two of you. And so I thought we could maybe start with some just real quick details, and we'll probably hit these again at the end, but some details about the conference. It's happening in July 13th through the 17th, which is a Monday through Friday, in case you don't have your calendar in front of you. It's in Krakow, Poland. I'm not familiar with if it's pronounced ICE or ICE, Congress Center, which is, I guess, the venue. You can go to ep2026.europython.eu, and I'll have the link in the show notes also.
Yeah, so I could maybe say a few words about us.
Yeah.
We are Europe's longest running Python conference, and this year we are celebrating the 25th anniversary, which is quite exciting. So we are going to have a little celebration at the conference.
Nice.
Interesting thing is that we are organized by volunteers. And just to give you some idea about the numbers, we have usually around 1,500 participants, over 100 speakers. It's a week of all things Python, so there are 2 days of tutorials, 3 days of talks, and 2 days of sprints. And apart from regular talks and tutorials that are at every conference, we also have lots of other interesting content. My colleague Daria could maybe introduce some of those.
For sure. In addition to talks and tutorials that Mia has mentioned, we also do things like summits. This year, Rust Summit and Language Summit will be with us. We tend to have also CAPI Summit or packaging folks meeting up. We definitely have a poster session, but also events like the PyLadies Day, where we have lunch session for people from underrepresented groups in computing. We have networking sessions for them, different workshops sometimes. We also have workshops that are beginner-friendly, typically Django Girls or Humble Data, things like that, that don't even require getting a conference ticket. We definitely also provide space for community organizers from Europe and all around the world to meet up and talk about things that are an issue in our communities, social events, open spaces, lots of things like that.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like it's a bit of an extension of what PyCon is doing, especially PyCon US. They have a lot of the people that are coming in to do, I guess they had the packaging summit and some security and some other different things. So that's really good to hear. keeping the community all able to meet up and talk about those issues. So maybe we could start about what your roles are for the conference and how you got involved with organizing for this event. Do you want to go first, Daria?
I can, for sure. My role this year is I'm leading the small but mighty communications team for EuroPython. Last year, I was organizing one of the smaller events during the sprint session, the Beginner's Day and conference.
Okay.
Mia?
So I'm vice chair of the EuroPython Society. The EuroPython Society is the nonprofit that's standing behind the conference. We take care of the legal and fiscal setup, and we oversee the whole conference organization. We also support other European communities through our grants program. And when it comes to conference, I also lead the design team. And when it comes to the question how I got involved, it's actually a very long story. So I've been involved with the Python community in Prague, where I'm based for many years. I'm the main organizer of a Prague Python meetup called PIVA, and I was also involved with our national PyCon, and I was the main organizer of Prague Python Pizza. And when EuroPython was coming to Prague, EuroPython was in Prague in 2023, 4 and 5. But when it was coming there, I immediately knew that I want to be part of it because it's a big international conference. It's a very cool one. And I knew that I want to be a part of it. So at the beginning, I first helped with some local stuff. I provided some advice, you know, how to do things locally in Prague. But over time, I got involved more and more. I first organized some workshops, some events, then I was member of the program team, and then I got on the board and became the vice chair of the nonprofit behind it.
Awesome.
And I got recruited by Mia, I think is the short story, whose superpower is really recruiting people for conferences. I've seen it a couple of times, people are coming saying, oh, it must be so nice to be organizing such a cool conference. And Mia will say, yep, how about you join us? And people are like, okay, cool. So what do I do? T-shirts? Okay, I can do t-shirts.
Yeah.
Mia approached me and asked, we've been having coffee, and she asked if I wouldn't mind joining them for EuroPython. I think the third edition by then.
Nice.
I said, maybe not. I'm a little bit burned out as an organizer. I've been doing this for many years, and I was planning to just step away a little bit. And she said, oh, but you know, your friend Honza Javorek will be organizing this very cool event for locals, for the beginners. So yeah, of course, I ended up doing that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's useful. Both of you mentioned in your bios that you sent me that you both speak Polish, so that helps in this particular case. I don't know how many local people come to these events. I'm guessing it skews depending on where EuroPython is this particular year.
So every year, the biggest group of people are mostly local people because obviously the cost of attending for them is the lowest. So I speak Czech, and Daria also speaks Czech and Polish. So I think that's very useful.
Yeah. I can admit to the organizing skills of Mia. She was also at the DjangoCon Europe and asking me lots of questions about podcasting and podcasting equipment. So, and I don't know, we can maybe mention it briefly, but you do have a podcast show. We'll include a link for it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I have a little YouTube channel. It's called Behind the Comet. And because I travel often and I meet lots of interesting and inspiring people, I sometimes do those conversations, which I publish on my YouTube channel and on all audio platforms. And I need to mention that Chris was very helpful and very supportive when I approached him and asked him about the setup. Behind the Comet is a do-it-yourself type of podcast. So it's not as professional as Real Python is, but I got very inspired seeing Chris's audio equipment.
All right. Well, it's good to see that there have been some episodes coming out, and I definitely will share the links to it. When I've had other people come on to talk about conferences, you guys have given us a great background of like how you were brought into it. What I think is interesting, you know, beyond just like asking people, are there other techniques that you have to like continue to build a team and pass on practices? It sounds like both of you have a background in volunteering. What goes into that? And as far as like building up the next generation of organizers?
I think that I'm a good example of what it means to be discovered, brought on, and then developed.
Okay.
And from my perspective, I came to organize something fun and cool under the umbrella of this very popular, very respected conference, but we did it for our local community. And I came to organize that, but I stayed for the people. I felt empowered and respected, and my ideas were valued from the very beginning, even though I was a very new face in this organization that is quarter of a century old by now.
Yeah.
And so I tried to pass it on and build a similar experience for new people who have joined us after me. And definitely we put effort into documenting things. You know, the bus factor is a real thing. Whenever somebody needs to leave the organizing team, which happens in volunteering because it's something we do on top of our real jobs,
yes,
so to speak, we want to make sure that we have things documented. The team before me has done a great job of setting up infrastructure, building automations that we are now benefiting from. But definitely making sure that we bring in more people, new people who will bring new ideas, new energy, who will also take over those roles from us so then we can, exactly, Mia started as being the local expert and now she's on the board of EuroPython Society, taking care of completely different things. Definitely developing the team is something we're putting some effort into.
Yeah, yeah. The part that I find interesting there and has been like a theme since I started the podcast is talking to other community organizers that generally the Python community is very friendly and interested in growing the language, not keeping it siloed, really interested in like, what are people doing with this language and excited to bring more people on board. And I don't know if that's true of a lot of other groups. And I definitely see it from my European colleagues. They're very much interested in this and very interested in coming to the conference. Were you doing like a meetup or something before? I'm trying to figure out what was that initial event that brought you in.
The initial event that I did for EuroPython.
Oh, it was for EuroPython. Okay.
It was for EuroPython. But before EuroPython, I have been also involved in the Czech Python community.
Yeah. Okay.
Before that, I come from the side of site reliability engineering, and I've been doing meetups related to that as well.
Yeah, yeah. Great. And Mia?
So before that, I was a part of Python community for years to mostly involved with some smaller initiatives. EuroPython was for me super interesting because it's a big conference and everything is huge. And whatever you do from organization point of view, you have to think how to do it because you cannot do things manually. So we have lots of scripts, so we have lots of automation, we have lots of infrastructure. And it's really interesting to see how actually to do those things, how to optimize for things and how to do it in an efficient way when actually you have so many things to do.
Yeah, yeah. I was asking somebody who was doing some of the different talks at conferences across the years, and I had asked them about EuroPython, and I said, well, tell me a little bit about it. Like, what's unique compared to, like, say, PyCon US, which I had been to a couple times, and they made a joke that the thing was the coffee was the biggest difference. But I wonder if you could say, like, you know, what do you think is unique about EuroPython compared to, say, something like PyCon US?
Yeah, so I've been to a few PyCon US conferences, and from my perspective, EuroPython is a bit more quirky. So there are lots of interesting small things, like, for example, Snacks Exchange. We have a table where people leave their snacks and you can go and try snacks from any country.
That sounds cool.
We also, last year, we had a group of musicians who met in open spaces to rehearse, and during the closing session, they played Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, which I thought is super cute. We also have lots of social events which are organized by the community. So last year during the social event, the most popular thing at the event was actually salsa dancing workshop. I took part in it and I loved it. It was my first time dancing salsa and it was a great opportunity. It was so much fun.
That's cool.
One also interesting thing about EuroPython is that it's always in nice cities and in historical places. So before this, it was in Prague, and Prague is called the City of Thousand Spires because it looks like straight out of Hogwarts. It's a really beautiful place. This year, we are in Krakow, which also has very beautiful architecture. The city is very walkable. There's lots of culture, lots of museums. And this year, thanks to the city of Krakow, all attendees will have free public transportation tickets and they will get access to certain museums. So I think it's very nice that as a part of conference experience, you can also go to some museums and see some nice castles. And you can, you know, experience some local culture. And I also think that nice thing about EuroPartner is that it travels between different countries. And of course, this is something that from organizer point of view can be very challenging because each European Union country has different laws and fiscal setup, etc. But also for attendees, we believe that provides lots of value because EU countries are very diverse. Those countries have different cultures. They have different language.
Yeah.
Each country has different food. And I think this is a great opportunity for people who come to EuroPython that they can just go and explore different places. If you look at places, for example, if you compare the UK with Italy or with Poland or with Spain, all those are very different countries, which like are way different than the US states itself. So I think those are some of very interesting things that come as a part of package. It's like a Euro trip for lots of people who are coming outside of Europe.
Hey, yeah, that's awesome. Dari, have anything to add?
Yes. I haven't been to PyCon US yet, so I am not able to compare the conferences, but I agree with everything Mia said about EuroPython. That's my experience that It's a diverse community. I'm Polish, so I'm extremely excited that PyCon, EuroPython is coming to Poland, to Krakow. I think it's going to be a great conference.
Yeah. I had a separate question, but you mentioned a bunch of things already, some of the details about the conference and the location. Is there any other stuff that we were missing there that you want to share that are specific about the conference and the location?
Yeah, maybe just to mention, how do we choose location for EuroPython? Because this is a question that often people ask us. So we have open call for bids and we let venues send their proposals. It's a very long process. It takes around 6 months. So we have two rounds. And in the first round, we had around 20 venues. In the second one, we had four final venues. And usually when we are searching for a location, we are searching for something that is within the EU and Schengen, so people can freely travel, something that is affordable. So the total cost of attendance, which means hotels and transportation, food and everything, is affordable for people who want to afford the conference. So for this year specifically, we wanted to go to a place that is equal or cheaper than Prague, because we noticed that the job market is not really great. Lots of companies are laying off people. Lots of people cannot travel to the US. So we really wanted to make the conference affordable to lots of people who cannot make it to the US or who lost their jobs or are in some difficult situation. We also have FinAid program for that. And also we were searching for a place that is safe for different groups, for example, LGBT groups. And we wanted to be in a country that we have never been to before, which has good English support, and Poland basically filled all these requirements. As I said, Krakow is a historical city. It has an airport. It's very safe. There are lots of cafes, museums, galleries, salt mine, and there are lots of great things there. I'm pretty sure attendees will have lots of fun exploring the city on their own.
Yeah. I'm excited to see pictures and stuff from people sharing online. It's time to shine a spotlight on another RealPython video course. It's about a tool that gets brought up at the end of the episode. And it's something to help you turn those Python scripts into an application you can share with others using the command line interface. It's titled Building Command Line Interfaces with ArgParse. And it's based on a RealPython tutorial by Leidan Esposo Ramos. In the course, RealPython instructor and my frequent co-host, Christopher Trudeau, takes you through what the Python ArgParse library is, and why it's important to use it if you need to write command line scripts in Python. How to use the Python ArgParse library to quickly create a simple CLI in Python. And then, what are the advanced uses of the Python ArgParse library? You'll learn how to implement positional versus optional arguments, employ flags, add custom actions, and even how to add a subparser. If you're interested in making reusable applications and tools for yourself or to share with others, a flexible command line interface is a good place to start. And Python's built-in library, ArgParse, has got you covered. RealPython video courses are broken into easily consumable sections, and where needed, include code examples for the technique shown. All our lessons have a transcript, including closed captions. Check out the video course. You can find a link in the show notes, or you can find it using the search tool on realpython.com. One of the things that I thought was unique this year as I looked through your list of talks and tracks is they seem to be very, very diverse as far as like the topics that you're covering. And something that I've noticed over the last couple of years is there were kind of an abundance of like AI type of conversations. And I felt like some of the more esoteric, or in my opinion, people who listen to the show, I think probably know that I come from a creative side and I'm very interested in things that people do with Python. And I feel like that really comes across. Like there's a couple different tracks that you have there, like Python for Games, Art and Play, Art, Play, and Expression, and then an Internet of Things, Embedded Systems, and Hardware Integration, which are things that I've definitely talked about on my show that I think are interesting, along with community building. So was that like a concerted effort to try to have these different talks and different tracks?
Definitely. You know, when we think about people who use Python, what comes to the mind of most of people are programmers, because that's most obvious. But we are deeply enough in the community and have sufficiently broad networks to know that there are so many different applications for Python and so many different people use it for different purposes. So you will have scientists using Python to analyze data. You have data scientists. Yes, you have people working on machine learning and AI and developing models and things like that. And that happens in Python as well. But you also have geneticists analyzing data with it. You have people who are experts and maybe are core developers. But on the other end of the spectrum, you've got folks who have maybe are trying to change careers right now or are learning Python to automate something at work, maybe even for marketing purposes. So we very much as organizers like to create space where all of those people can come together, share their knowledge and experiences and learn from each other and talk not about, oh, this is the standard library. These are the most common tools we use when we're developing in Python, but also about things like sustainability or ethics, legal aspects of open source. That's something that shows up on the conference regularly because of EU regulation and the input that we can provide to that. So we're definitely mindful of building a conference that brings together more people of different interests that makes the conference just more enriching and valuable for everybody.
You mentioned it. There's a lot of data science stuff. There's data preparation and visualizations, data engineering and ML ops, Jupyter and scientific Python, machine learning. So there's definitely a focus there. In addition, you mentioned it, Python core stuff, testing, quality assurance. Along with that, community building, education, outreach. I'm always kind of interested in that stuff myself. So yeah, it seems like a very wide base of things that people could find different tracks that they can follow along. You can talk a little bit about some of the talks that you are excited about that you think might be interesting to give a sampling of some of the stuff people can check out.
Yeah, so I have three talks that I'm very excited about. The first one is update on the CPython JIT, what to expect in 3.15 by Diego Russo. I'm very excited about this one because I've been following JIT throughout the last two or three versions. And it's a very interesting story, actually, because JIT used to be very slow and there are significant speed improvements now there. And it's a very interesting because this was part of the Faster CPython project, which was founded by Microsoft, but then Microsoft stopped supporting it and the community stepped up. So I'm very interested to see what to expect in 3.15 and what are speed gains there. The second topic I'm very interested in is Python Dix, Past, Present, and Free-Threaded Future by Lysandros Nikolaou. I just gave a talk at PyCon US about Python dictionaries and how they work under the hood. I think they're a very interesting data structure, and I like poking around things and learning how things work.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to expect, actually, how are they related to the free-threaded Python. So I'm super interested to see what is the future. And the third talk that I'm very interested in is called The Coolest Feature in Python 3.14 Sys Remote Exec by Savannah Ostrovsky. I know that this feature exists. I've already seen it, but I've never used it. So I'm very interested to see how does it work. Why is that the coolest feature in 3.14?
All right. Awesome. Yeah. Lots of kind of low-level performance stuff.
Yeah. I think that's very interesting. And this year, we are lucky to have lots of core developers around.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons is because we are hosting the Language Summit. So there will be lots of core developers around, and Guido will be there as well. So I think this will be a great opportunity for people to learn more about what's new in Python, what are some things that will get released in future versions, and in general, just to have an opportunity to chat with people who are writing the language itself.
Yeah, yeah. People that are working hard underneath the hood there, getting everything ready. And Dario, what are some of the talks that you're interested in?
I think it's fair to say that all of us organizers are most excited about one of our keynotes, in which Łukasz Langa and Pablo Galindo Salgado will be recording their Core.py podcast with a special guest who will be Guido van Rossum.
Yeah.
So we're definitely looking forward to that. Additionally, I come from the side of running production and operations, so every year I look for topics related to monitoring, observability, things like that. I do love generally topics about leadership and personal development, because sometimes I have a chance to hear from principal engineers in really large companies about how they started and how they grew. That's very inspiring for me.
Yeah, yeah. That stuff is always interesting. We were at a little conversation before we started, and I was telling you a little bit about my background, but I kind of came back into Python and generally into programming a little late in my life. And so I get to ask my co-host, Christopher Trudeau, often about, you know, he has a real background in agile and these kind of methodologies of software development. And it just is super intriguing to me to see, like, okay, well, how's that work inside this company and so forth? I got to see like a handful of companies, like two or three, how they worked inside. But usually I was very much the solo developer in these kinds of places, creating, you know, individual tools. It is intriguing to me to think about, like, okay, well, how do you get a whole team going and how do you manage the code and stuff like that? So I agree, those are interesting topics. Well, I mentioned a bunch that I was already interested in, the whole track about games, art, and play and expressions and embedded systems. There's a whole like laundry list of people who've been on the show coming to talk, which I think is great. Stephanie Molin is there to talk about abstract syntax trees. And you have a whole separate, again, another track about web development, web APIs, front-end integration. I mentioned the whole side for data science, lots of stuff going on there. And then, like you said, there's a whole thing on ethics, social responsibility. So please check out the website. There's lots of really interesting stuff happening. Are all the talks recorded?
Yes, all the talks are recorded and they will be released later on our YouTube channel. We have a YouTube channel with all talks from previous years, so you can also have a look there and see what was on our schedule in previous years.
Awesome. One of the things I thought about just mentioning briefly, I don't get to do this often. I wonder, how are you using Python currently? How are you using Python in your work? It's nice to hear different voices and different people that are out in the community doing stuff. Maybe we could start with Daria. How are you using Python currently?
I typically use Python for automation and CLIs. It's one of the favorite languages for me to build CLIs in.
What tools do you use for that?
ArtParse.
Okay. You like using the built-in stuff. Okay, cool.
For sure. Because then I don't have dependencies that I have to install additionally. It makes my life much simpler.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned that you're very interested in, I think you said, backend stuff, sort of deployment, is that right?
Yes, deployments, topics of running, production, monitoring, alerting, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. So the new, I mean, this isn't directly related. I think maybe Mia would talk about this a little bit too. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's coming in Python 3.15 for the monitoring sort of side of like performance, built-in profiling. Are you excited about some of that new stuff that's coming in 3.15?
Definitely.
Okay, cool. So Mia, how are you using Python?
Yeah, so I use Python nowadays mostly for full stack web development. So I mostly use Django. I also have previous experience with using Fast API, Flask, and Django. So all the popular frameworks.
Yeah, yeah.
I also have experience with building microservices and SDKs and all this regular stuff. And this is an interesting thing because I used to do full stack at the very beginning of my career, and I picked backend because I more like servers and databases and all this stuff. But now, thanks to AI, I made a full circle and came back to full stack because Claude can write React for me. So I mostly use Python to create web apps nowadays.
How's that experience been having AI tools help you write the front end?
I think it's great because it helps me with things that would take me more time than usually. And I think if you work on some simple front ends, it's super useful because even if you don't have experience with that, it can create you something very simple. And it's also very good for creating prototypes because we used to design things in Figma or different tools. And then we used to make lots of those, you know, rounds back and forth. Do we want this button like this or like that or whatever? But now you can just prompt Claude and say, hey, this is what I want. Can you create me a few prototypes? And it creates you a prototype. And then you can communicate with the decision maker or with your customer and just show them and ask, which one do you like more? So I think AI is a big enabler for that. I do think it has lots of own problems, but also I like using AI because it helps me to be more productive.
Yeah, I think the iterations and, like you said, the prototype stuff can be really handy with that. The idea that you can kind of stand something up quickly and have people at least touch it as opposed to just, like you said, see it in something like Figma.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is something that is in web development very useful because you often work with your end customers and it's much useful to create something and to show them, especially when they're able to click on it, to see how does it work, to try it out themselves rather than have a discussion over some feature or, for example, to prototype something in Figma or some other tool that takes so many backs and forths just to agree on a simple feature.
Yes.
So I think this is the area that has the biggest potential.
Yeah, cool. Well, everybody who comes on the show, I like to ask them these questions about what are you excited about that's happening in the world of Python? I think we touched on it a little bit. Obviously, the conference that's coming up. But Daria, do you have any other things that you're excited about that are happening in the world of Python?
Well, because I am now in Vancouver.
Okay.
And it's a recent change. I am particularly interested in communities that are around here. And I'm trying to figure out whether PyLadies are active. Are there Python meetup groups? I just missed the PyCascades conference.
Yeah.
Because I've learned about it too late. But the thing that I'm most excited about now is discovering the community in British Columbia.
Isn't there, I think it's called Puppy. Is that one of the ones? It's one of the user groups that's in the Pacific Northwest there. You know, I always think of the, you know, Portland, Seattle, and Vancouver. They're, you know, that's where PyCascades rotates around. There's a few different user groups in those areas.
I'll be looking for those.
Okay, awesome. Mia, what are you excited about that's happening in the world of Python?
So I'm super excited about the new 3.15 features. One of the things that I think is really cool are lazy imports. According to some benchmarks, they make your app 3 times faster. So I'm very excited about this. And another thing that I'm very excited about is free threaded build. I have already tried it. I tried just to run some small scripts to see how much faster it is, and it is much faster. But I think this is a thing that you might not notice now because if you run something CPU intensive in production, you're probably not running it in Python. You're probably running it in something else. So you might not see the difference. But I think the real difference will come once the packages start adopting it.
Yeah.
And it always works in a way that first there's a change in the core language and then other packages start adopting it. And there is already a page where you can see how many packages have adopted it, and lots of them are now, you know, just experimenting with it, trying to figure out how to adopt it. But I think this is something that will be huge once more packages adopted, because everything will become so much faster.
Yeah.
This is also one of the things that I would really like to learn about more next, just to experiment a bit more with free-threaded build, because I think it's a really huge thing and it's super interesting.
Yeah, yeah. With the beta already out, it's time for people to start working on all this stuff. So that's great. So that covers your what you want to learn next is to work on that stuff. Or is there something else that you want to learn next?
Yeah, I think this is mostly it. And, you know, trying out new 3.15 features and just checking what's new. As you can see, I'm a huge fan of technologies and I like checking what's new. And I like building things from main and just, you know, trying out new features and stuff. I think it's super interesting and I'm super excited about the new 3.15 and then later versions too.
Yeah. So Daria, is there something that you want to learn next? This doesn't have to be about programming per se.
I am actually at the point where I spent the last decade looking into the details of everything. I remember somebody mentioning that SRE is like being an expert in everything a little bit. So I got to tip my toes in a lot of technologies. And right now I'm actually more interested in how I can take that experience, blend it with communications, maybe with project management, and open a new chapter for myself professionally. But when I'll be toying with code a little bit,
yeah,
it may be web applications in Python. That's something that I did not get to do too much, and always interested in open telemetry and the applications.
Did you say web applications? Is that what you said?
Yes, I did. I'm frankly, when it comes to Python, I'm a relative newbie.
No, that stuff's very interesting, and I agree with you. Like, when it comes down to it, all the different careers that I've had across my life, what has been the crux has been communication. I mean, being a teacher, you know, now being a podcaster, being a programmer and working inside of teams and being that person that can kind of translate between all these teams has always been kind of one of these powers that I have. But I totally understand. Like, I think those are the people that are really going to be useful kind of going forward, is the people that can connect, communicate, and tie all these things together. Because in the end, it's like, yes, there's all these super powerful tools that can help us generate code, but like, what are we trying to do? And communicating that across everybody is going to be so important. So Mia, we mentioned a couple things that you're doing, but how can people follow the work that you do online? What's the best way?
Yeah, so I am on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Blue Sky. So if you just type in my name, Mia Bajic, you can find me there. As I already mentioned, I have a small podcast on YouTube and audio platforms called Behind the Comet. And I also have my own website, miabajic.dev, where you can find more information about me. And if you would ever like to chat about communities, Python, or anything, you can always send me an email at mia@europython.eu.
And Daria, how can people follow the work that you do online?
The best way is to get in touch with me on LinkedIn, I think, as Daria Linhart-Grudzień. And if anybody would like to chat exactly communities or anything related to what we've discussed in this episode, then daria@europython.eu is the best contact.
Awesome. Maybe we could reiterate one more time the details for EuroPython. Again, the website is ep2026.europython.eu. And again, link in the show notes. It's happening July 13th through 19th, and it's in Krakow, Poland. So is there anything else I missed there?
You can definitely follow EuroPython on most social media. We are on LinkedIn, YouTube, Mastodon, Blue Sky, Instagram, TikTok, X. We're everywhere. So please follow us on EuroPython. We've got a lot of exciting stuff coming.
Yes. Well, I want to thank both of you for coming on the show. It was really fantastic to talk to you.
It's been great.
Yeah, we would like to thank you for the invitation too.
You're welcome.
It was fun.
Yes. I want to thank Daria and Mia for joining me this week on the show. And I want to thank you for listening. If you like the episode, a great way to help us grow our audience is to share it with other Python users who you think might enjoy it. You can also leave a rating or a review on your podcast platform of choice. If you or your company are interested in sponsoring the podcast, you can find all the information at realpython.com/advertise. You can find show notes with links to the topics we spoke about inside your podcast player or at realpython.com/podcast. And while you're there, you can leave us a question or a topic idea. I've been your host, Christopher Bailey, and I look forward to talking to you soon.